rating each gripper so that customers could more equally compare them. Flipping 101, the college textbook edition. A college student with a family to support reads between the lines and turns a $20 startup into almost $70,000 within 2 years. This story will flip your lid. Let's face it, college is downright expensive. And it's not just tuition that produces sticker shock. One of the biggest expenses is textbooks, which typically cost much more than any other books. It can be a real problem for cash-starved students. The good news is, wherever there's a problem, there's a side hustle just waiting in the wings. This brings us to Marcus Cousy, who found himself between a rock and a hard place. Marcus was a full-time student at Castleton University in Vermont, heading toward a promising degree in computer information systems. But money was tight. Marcus had recently immigrated to the United States from Ghana in West Africa. When he wasn't cramming for exams, he was working part-time making furniture and providing IT assistance at the university. And as if that wasn't enough to keep him busy, he was also a new father. His wife, Ashley, stayed home with their daughter so that they didn't have to pay for childcare. And Marcus was the primary breadwinner, despite also being a full-time student. There had to be a better way. And that's when he stumbled upon the wonderful world of reselling. He had read my book, The $100 Startup, and was motivated by stories of everyday people who use small amounts of money to start their own business. Since he didn't have much money to spare, he took $5 every month for 4 months and set it aside for his startup costs. Then, with bills piling up, he put on his thinking cap. Unlike some of the people he'd read about in the case studies from my book, Marcus needed money right away. Not only was reselling low risk, it was something he could start immediately. The kind of reselling he was interested in was a simple flip business, where you buy something at one price and resell it for another, preferably a higher one. Now, all he needed was something to flip. College book prices are a common pain point with university students, and Marcus believed that if you were going to resell something, it helped to find an item that a lot of people were looking for on a regular basis. If artificial inflation continued to drive the price of textbooks sky high, cheap textbooks were never going to stop being in high demand. And who knows more about textbooks than a college student? It seemed like his best bet, and Marcus was eager to close the chapter on his financial woes. He began his hunt where many resourceful college students find themselves when it comes time to buy books for class: eBay. With his $20 in startup capital, he purchased 2 books, relisted them for sale, and sold them right away for around $70. It seemed to be working, but was it sustainable? Instead of pocketing that initial profit, Marcus reinvested it in more books and created an Amazon seller account. In his experience, eBay was fine for occasional transactions, but your rate of return is mostly driven by the consumer. On Amazon, you can set your own price and have full control of profit margins. And since Marcus needed to get paid on a regular basis, he had to expand. Within his first year, Marcus pulled in $20,000. In year two, those profits climbed above $48,000, almost $70,000 in total. Over the course of those 2 years, he flipped more than 5,000 college textbooks. And it all started with $20 saved in $5 increments across 4 months. So how did Marcus manage to score books so cheaply, and how did he know which books would sell? First, he realized that many students didn't actually know the value of their books. They'd buy those books from the bookstore, only to find out that either the bookstore wasn't planning on selling them next term, or that the bookstore would only buy them back for a small fraction of their selling price. What's a broke student to do with this excess of seemingly worthless books? Sell them on eBay. And that's where Marcus came in. He found that students are often desperate and motivated to get rid of their books. The sooner the better. With that in mind, he learned to reach out to sellers directly whenever he noticed a book he wanted to buy. He'd make a cash offer for immediate transfer. The impatience of youth often worked in his favor, and he'd use this technique early in the bidding when the bids were low, which made his offer look more desirable in comparison. As for knowing which books would sell, it's not magic. It just involves keeping an eye on Amazon's sales ranking system. When Marcus found something promising on eBay, he'd head straight to Amazon to see where that title landed on their ranking system. This was an easy way for him to determine whether it was in high demand, and therefore, if it was a worthwhile investment. With enough monitoring, he learned that if a book had a sales rank of 75,000 or lower, it was being purchased consistently. Those were the titles he'd then try to snap up and resell. The side hustle proved to be a much-needed lifeline for him and his family. It provided them with a way to pay their bills and save up an emergency fund. When the washer or heater broke, it didn't end up being the end of the world. All things come to an end, even books, and the textbook flipping side hustle was no different. When Marcus graduated and started working as an IT business analyst, he stopped reselling textbooks and started thinking about a new project. This chapter may have concluded, but the next is just beginning. Critical factor. College textbooks are a renewing market. Every semester, there are lots of buyers and sellers. By keeping a close eye on online auctions, Marcus was able to profit on the difference in price as he moved books from one student to another. This story also has an action plan. Step one, a reselling project is all about buying something at one price, then selling it at a higher price. Step two, identify items that you might be able to resell. In this story, textbooks were perfect. It was a renewing market with lots of buyers and sellers, and Marcus was a student, therefore all too familiar with their high prices. Step three, begin experimenting by buying a few items at a time, listing them for resale, and paying attention to what works and what doesn't. For best results, do more of what works. And step four, increase your average selling price by providing impeccable service. This will generate positive reviews, which in turn creates trust from buyers. Side Hustle Labs, where to find items to resell. Reselling is probably the easiest side hustle to start. Even if you've never done it before, you can be up and running within a week. And your basic goal as a reseller is simple. Buy low, sell high. Or at least, sell at a price higher than you pay, and one that compensates you for your time and any other costs. So where do you find these items to resell? Well, first, start with what you already own. Do you have comic books in the attic or old clothes in the back of the closet? Take an inventory, and then get paid for getting them out of your house. Second, start thrifting. Go around to yard sales, garage sales, or flea markets. Bring your phone so you can discreetly look up average sales prices for anything you find. When you discover a potential discrepancy, something you can buy for less than you think you can sell it for, snap it up. Those actions will get you comfortable with the basics of selling online. To take it up a level, like some of the people in this book have done, you'll need to have a more consistent source of products. It usually helps to specialize in something. And it's best if you specialize in something that isn't cheap, camera gear or luxury clothing, for example. You may also want to look at a source like Alibaba. We'll talk about that a bit more as the book goes along. And you can also learn more at sidehustleschool.com/resell. Chapter 5, teach what you know. Your knowledge is valuable. Take what you've learned and share it with others. Cheap plane ticket site becomes million-dollar hustle. A political analyst uses his travel skills to help travelers save money, attracting more than 275,000 email subscribers along the way. For many years, Scott Keyes worked as a political journalist in Washington, D.C. He wrote about topics ranging from voting rights to homelessness, but most of all, he covered political campaigns. The job required a lot of travel to political events around the country. Scott realized from the beginning that frequent flyer miles would be a perk of the job, so he set about figuring out how to generate as many as possible and get the most value he could from them. He studied up on the basics of mileage runs and earning points from credit cards and soon became a frequent flyer miles evangelist. Before long, he realized that this compendium of information he'd collected might be useful to others. As he puts it, many frequent flyer programs are purposefully opaque because the airlines know that any unused mile or point is a savings to them. Scott decided to start with combining his day job of writing with his side hobby of travel. He wrote a brief explanatory ebook on how to generate and use frequent flyer miles. The book wasn't a bestseller. It sold enough copies to buy a couple of beers a week, but that was about it. Despite the book's meager sales, he enjoyed the process of research and writing about flight deals. 2 years later, Scott was living what he calls a terrible journalist life in Oaxaca, Mexico, where he freelanced for publishers back in the States. In the midst of all this travel writing, he developed a reputation among his friends and colleagues as a travel expert. This reputation was bolstered when he bought a nonstop round-trip ticket from New York City to Milan for just $130. When he got back, dozens of friends asked him to let them know the next time he saw a fare like that so that they could jump on it. Rather than try to remember each individual person he was supposed to notify, he decided to make a simple email list and just let everyone know at once. He called it Scott's Cheap Flights. Over the next 18 months, that email list grew by word of mouth from a couple dozen friends to 300 people, but it was still just a hobby. Everything changed when he posted a map on Facebook showing off the two-month trip he was about to take with his girlfriend. This trip consisted of 13 countries, 21 flights, and 20,000 miles, all for free thanks to his points. As luck would have it, a friend forwarded the map to a friend of hers at Business Insider, who thought it would make for an interesting article. The piece got a click-worthy headline, "This guy has gamed the airline industry so he never has to pay for a flight again," and ended up going viral. As a result, his sleepy email list for friends grew overnight from 300 subscribers to more than 5,000, This explosive growth was both a blessing and a curse. With so many subscribers, Scott would have to pay his email service for hosting costs. He enjoyed sending great deals to his friends, but he didn't really want to pay out of pocket to do so for thousands of strangers. During that 2-month trip, he thought about how best to monetize the opportunity. Should he put ads in the newsletters or get paid for referrals to travel agencies? He finally settled on a freemium model, where subscribers can join the basic list for free, but there's also a premium version with extra perks for those who pay a monthly fee. This small newsletter continued to experience massive growth. Over the next 2 years, it grew to more than 275,000 subscribers. The last time we spoke, Scott had 29,639 premium subscribers and 204,021 free subscribers. Thanks to a Black Friday promotion, he had generated $963,234 in sales that year, all from those premium members. The numbers are now substantially higher. So what's next? Well, he's still obsessed. In his words, he plans to continue to scour for cheap flights like a hungry dog, improve the features and customer experience at Scott's Cheap Flights, and keep traveling the world. These days, he can buy more than just a couple of beers with his profits. Critical factor. Scott selected a topic that has widespread interest and chose an extremely simple name, Cheap Flights, for the project. He then focused on doing only one thing, delivering emails with flight deals over and over. This story includes an action plan. Step 1. Select an attractive topic, cheap plane tickets in this case, that is potentially valuable yet also misunderstood by a lot of people. Step 2. Set up a free or low-cost email list. Step 3. Invite everyone you know to join and encourage them to spread the word. Step 4. Focus on finding and delivering great deals or other special information. Step 5. Introduce a paid membership option that provides additional premium content. And step 6, continue to research and publish deals every day. Lifelong Girl Scout earns her side hustle badge. After spending 20 plus years as a Girl Scout and volunteer, a woman creates a series of resources for troop leaders. Selling at just $3 to $5 each, she earns up to $3,000 per month. The Girl Scouts had been a big part of Jody Carlson's life for over 25 years. For 12 of those years, she'd been a scout. And for the rest of the time, she served as a troop leader. But when her son was born, Jody decided it was time to step down from the position and focus the time on her young family. Although she loved the challenge of her new home life, she missed the volunteering and organizing she'd devoted so many years to. She knew she couldn't commit herself to a schedule with lots of fixed appointments, like she'd have to do as a troop leader, but she still wanted a meaningful way to contribute to the Scout community and inspire these young visionaries. Her local troop was based in a small city in Ohio, located along the banks of Lake Erie. The year before her son was born, Jody had created a website to share what the troop had been doing and to offer advice to other leaders around the country. She'd also written a short ebook that she offered for sale for $5, just hoping to cover the gas her car used to get to the meetings, and was surprised that after 6 months, people from the other side of the country were still buying it. She felt that if she could expand her product line, this site would be the perfect way to help the community and make some money to put toward her student loans. She called her upgraded project Leader Connecting Leaders. Startup costs were a grand total of $16 for a domain name. Jody was already paying for Adobe software for her day job as a designer, and she had access to a free hosting service. She was ready to go in just a few minutes. Her first step to growth was to discover where the current traffic to her site was coming from and how she could increase it. She added Google Analytics to her site and discovered that most of her visits came through Pinterest, from a few images she'd posted long ago. This played right into her hands as a designer. Jody created a new image for each of her articles and shared them on Pinterest. The few minutes she spent on this task allowed her to generate traffic for months after the article was initially shared. She's also used the power of social media to market the business in other ways. By running competitions, hosting giveaways, and writing shareable articles, Jody has been able to generate a lot of traffic through Facebook. These results gave her the confidence to try running ads for her products, but this strategy was met with more limited success. Most of the information on the site is freely available. Visitors can download long-form articles, tutorials, and how-to guides that provide most of the information they need to run a successful and harmonious Girl Scout troop. By the way, I should point out, Jody notes that her project is not affiliated with or endorsed by the parent organization that oversees the Girl Scouts. In fact, she even pays full price for the cookies. Jody puts a small price of between $3 to $5 on some of the more specific resources, activity booklets, printouts, and games, to help leaders solve specific problems in just a few clicks, and with a quick download from her site. From these low-priced resources, Jody is able to generate profits of $3,000 to $3,500 per month. Two parts of her business have helped her the most: automation and an engaged mailing list. She spends 4 hours a month using tools to create and schedule social media updates that will go live even when she's not at the computer. She also sends multiple emails each month, providing extra information to her most loyal readers, letting them know about new articles, ideas, and products. Building this trust, she says, has been integral to her success. The secret to profiting from a project with such low prices for each item is understanding the average Scout leader's challenges. After 25 years in the Girl Scouts, she's been there and experienced them all. Creating products that would have solved her problems long ago, along with writing the copy in an empathetic way that connects with the struggles of other leaders, has allowed her to grow her business without needing to be pushy. The best part of this success has been getting feedback from the leader she's been able to help. Nothing gives her more motivation on the day she doesn't want to work than receiving a message explaining how her activity booklets have transformed meetings and excursions for the better. This is especially true when they come from towns and cities she's never heard of. Jody is now toying with the idea of starting a new side hustle to run alongside her current one. Whatever she does next, she plans to continue making useful products for Girl Scout leaders far and wide. Critical factor. No one knew the needs of Girl Scout troop leaders as well as Jody. By providing many free resources, she was able to build trust with other leaders around the country. They then looked to her for help with specific problems, gladly spending small amounts of money that added up to real dollars for Jody. Psychologist helps students make the cut. After overcoming childhood barriers, this psychologist leverages educational success to help students gain entry to top schools. Growing up, Chirag Shamassian did not have it easy. Around the age of 8, he started exhibiting the symptoms of Tourette syndrome. Perhaps not surprisingly, he was mocked by his peers. The teasing, however, was not as tough for him as the lack of understanding and acceptance he experienced from his own Armenian immigrant family. Chirag remembers one family dinner in particular, where his dad wouldn't stop staring at him. Finally, his dad warned that if he didn't quit this habit of his, people would think he was stupid. "And how will that reflect on our family?" he added. Chirag stormed off, and these kinds of hurtful interactions went on for about a year until he was finally diagnosed. Though at the time he didn't fully understand the effects his condition would have on his life, he sensed it would significantly impact him. And it did. During high school and college, Chirag's interest in mental health and psychology blossomed. He began to realize that he could translate his personal experiences with the disorder to help others. Despite the early challenges, he went on to a high level of achievement. He studied human development at Cornell and attained a PhD in clinical psychology from UCLA. He was also able to graduate from both schools completely debt-free. He now works as a clinical research psychologist, developing tests used to assess children for mental health conditions. Based on this experience, his side hustle developed organically. While he was in school, his friends noticed his stellar track record of getting accepted and receiving funding from top colleges. They began to ask for help with their own applications. He obliged, assisting them free of charge. When those friends gained admittance to their dream schools, they started telling others, who also requested his services. As more and more people began knocking at his door, Chirag eventually decided to make the project official, launching Shamassian Academic Consulting. Though he knew very little about running a business, he didn't let that stop him. He dove straight into reading books and online articles about everything from business structure to sales and workflow. Between the training courses, books, and domain name registration, his startup costs totaled about $3,200. He kept expenses low wherever he could, using a free Squarespace website and a free MailChimp account. Even now, with a profitable business, his ongoing yearly costs are less than $2,500. During the first full year, the company earned just over $1,200, and in the second year, this jumped to $12,000. In the third year, the company's earnings surged to $74,000. Admissions consulting is a competitive arena, but Chirag has managed to stay ahead of the game by speaking for free at high schools and colleges. Available services, which include both advising and application support to prospective college students and graduate and medical school students, can cost his customers anywhere from $300 to $7,000. The extra income has allowed Chirag and his wife to worry less about buying fancy coffee or staying in nicer hotels when they travel. It's also given him peace of mind that if he ever loses his full-time job, he could still support his family through the business. He currently invests at least 20 hours a week into the project, providing consulting and completing various administrative tasks. Though he admits he could probably spend less time on it, he's always seeking ways to grow the business and reach more students. He's brought on two consultants to help and will soon add a third. He says his goal is to never turn away a student who wants support. So far, Chirag and his team have supported more than 200 students through one-on-one support and online courses. Their track record is impressive. For college, 90% of students have gotten into at least one of their top three choices, and for med school, over 90% have gotten into at least one U.S. school. While the students are acing their exams, Chirag is earning extra credit from his second income. Critical factor. Mastering the admissions game is a skill that requires strategic thinking and action. Chirag has proven success in helping people gain admission to top schools, both for himself and for others. PE teacher runs laps around membership site. A teacher starts a blog to serve other teachers. After selling a series of individual products, he switches over to a membership model. Ben Landers is a physical education teacher in Columbia, South Carolina. With two master's degrees, including one in educational leadership, Ben is both highly qualified and passionate about his job. There's a lot more to being a good PE teacher than just playing sports. He says that teaching students the right lessons empowers them to be stronger, healthier, and more confident. It also helps them make better decisions. A few years ago, Ben started thinking about how he could help more students. He wanted to go beyond his own school and even his school district, so he started a resource blog for teachers. It began as a way for him to reflect, answer common questions, and provide materials to help teachers out. He originally thought he would try to sell reports and online courses to make it sustainable, but he reworked that plan as he went along. Side hustle success often comes by drawing from a couple of different skills and combining them in some way. In addition to his passion for education, Ben had been a part-time videographer off and on since he was in college. Since he already had some equipment and was comfortable using video, his startup costs consisted mostly of buying a domain, getting website hosting, and setting up an email newsletter service. The first year, he focused on writing and creating other content to get his name out as an authority among PE teachers. He also learned how to publish digital products. Even though his primary focus that year was growing the blog, he still made enough from his first report sales to pay for the cost of the site and break even. When he got his first sale notification, he was on the treadmill at the gym. He immediately took a screenshot on his phone and texted it to his wife. Ben had put hundreds of hours into that $27 sale, but he felt like he had finally begun to unlock the power of the internet. Next, he made a big change that allowed him to earn a lot more than just $27. He realized that in the long term, selling one-off reports for a low price was not a great revenue model. He made a shift and decided to create a membership site where teachers would pay annually for access to resources. Immediately upon making that shift, he also started to make an actual profit from the business. He began with a beta launch and offered it to early users for $97 a year. Then, once he got a few kinks worked out, he launched the official membership at $149 a year. He currently has around 400 members, which are now his main source of income for the project. He also makes money from the guides that he still sells at a lower price. Altogether, in year two, he made about $11,000 from this project. In year three, he made $45,000, a fourfold increase. Earning so much money on the side is great by itself, but it also led to another huge benefit for his family. Because of the new program, Ben's wife was able to leave her job to come home and raise their young daughter. That change wasn't possible on his teacher's salary alone, but the extra income gave them the boost they needed to feel more confident. Also, his wife got inspired along the way. She's now working her own side hustle, providing daycare for their friend's children. Critical factor. Ben is both highly qualified and passionate about his topic. Business-wise, making the switch from selling reports to a monthly membership model brought him more predictable income. Construction inspector earns $200,000 helping students pass exams. A teacher-turned-construction inspector aces his exams and creates a series of courses to help others entering the field. Gabriel Kramer's side hustle story began after a big career transition. A former high school teacher who had burned out due to the lack of support from administrators, an all-too-common story, Gabe had started a new job as a construction inspector. He'd heard about this opportunity from a cousin who helped him get a job as an entry-level inspector. To advance in the industry, you have to earn certifications by passing exams. The more certifications you have, the more money you can make. From his background in education, including a master's degree he completed independently, Gabe had good study habits. In his first year, he studied for and passed several exams. Even beginning in the entry-level role, that year he made more than he did as a teacher. Over the next few years, he continued to gain experience, take more exams, and increase his earning potential further. This brings us to the next step and the side hustle that would eventually exceed the earnings from both jobs. In this industry, SI stands for Special Inspector, a certain kind of construction inspector, and certs is short for certifications. Gabe's hustle would be called, appropriately, SI Certs. To get SI Certs up and running, he offered equity to two friends, Dee and Chris. Dee worked as an internet marketer, while Chris was an experienced Photoshop hobbyist. Finally, he got Dee's brother, Alan, to build the site. He says that having these three partners on board from the start was a huge help, because it meant he could focus on his core skill of course creation. One of the main skills of inspectors is reading building plans. To help his students learn, Gabe shipped physical plans to them that complemented the online teaching. He even added his best teaching notes right on the plans. This teaching aid was unique to the industry. There were a few other people teaching cert study courses, but no one else was sending out physical plans. Video marketing was another strategy that was little used by anyone else. Therefore, after he created the first course, Gabe shot videos that covered material from the first exam entry-level employees are required to take. He uploaded the videos to YouTube, and the SI Search channel has produced a steady stream of traffic over the years. It recently reached 300,000 total views. SI Search was a success from the start. Every year since beginning, Gabe and the partners have averaged at least 60% revenue growth. 4 years in, they passed six figures in revenue. A big part of this success was because Gabe continued to create more courses, usually around one each year. Many of his students have become repeat customers, and the business continues to benefit from organic search results, as well as all those people who come in from YouTube. Gabe still works 9 to 5 in the construction industry, having switched roles a couple of years ago to take on a marketing director position. He enjoys the job and isn't thinking about working on SI certs full time, but he still invests a few hours each week to continue growing it. The business is on track to pass $200,000 in annual revenue, and growth doesn't seem to be slowing down. Brick by brick, he's building on a sturdy foundation. Critical factor. Passing tests leads to higher income, so students are highly incentivized to study and succeed. Gabe's proven courses can be a no-brainer investment for construction inspectors who want to get ahead. NYC jazz musician tunes up $40,000 a year blog. A musician finds financial freedom by growing an online community focused on teaching people how to play jazz. Brent Vartstra worked as a jazz musician, playing gigs around New York City. Like many musicians do, especially in expensive cities, he also had a number of other projects to make ends meet. But over the past 2 years, his day job has become what had been his main side hustle, a website and podcast called Learn Jazz Standards. It helps musicians get tips, advice, and resources for learning and playing jazz, and it makes money from selling ebooks, play-along tracks, and an online course. The website was the idea of a friend of his named Camden. Camden had started with a basic, quickly thrown-together template and worked on it for a few months before becoming too busy to continue. Camden still liked the idea of providing musicians with online resources and wanted to continue somehow. He thought of Brent because he was then in college studying for a bachelor's degree in jazz performance and needed some extra income. Camden offered to pay Brent out of the ad money the site was making to continue putting up educational posts. It wasn't a jackpot, but it gave Brent some pocket money while he was in school. He eventually became more invested in the site, accepting a 50-50 partnership to take over operations. Camden and Brent were now making more ad money, and they'd started selling play-along tracks for people to practice with. The extra $500 to $600 a month he earned was important to Brent as a struggling musician. He began to think of ways to increase the site's revenue even further. As part of a transition, he eventually bought Camden's half of the business. Camden's other career commitments were too demanding for him to contribute, and Learn Jazz Standards had become Brent's primary focus. It was fun having a friend to collaborate with, but the change opened up more doors for him. He started releasing ebooks and planned to produce a full course. With increased attention and the added income that came from working solo, his monthly income soared to a livable wage. He then redesigned the site and outlined an ambitious plan for growth. The best part is seeing how the years of hard work have finally paid off. After several months, he launched that first e-course, and in the launch month alone, he made $10,000. He was amazed that so many people would sign up simply because they trusted the website. For Brent, it was truly gratifying. He also says that the financial freedom has been incredible. It's taken him from a struggling musician to feeling secure. There's no more worrying if he'll get enough gigs next month to pay his rent. Yet he still gets to do what he loves, talking about and working on music, just with the security of having most of his bills taken care of. Critical factor. As Brent began creating products and focusing more attention on the blog, it blossomed from something that provided pocket money to a real asset paying thousands of dollars each month. Organic chemist masters educational alchemy. After hitting a number of career dead ends during a recession, a chemist charts a new course offering online tutoring. After earning an undergraduate degree in chemistry, James Ashenhurst spent a short spell in graduate school, but it wasn't meant to be, at least not at first. The best part was getting to go on a six-month study abroad trip to the Middle East. When he got back home, he started applying for jobs, but nothing came of it. Frustrated with his situation, he moved to Montreal to spend the summer. With no friends or work, he was free to wander about, and he paid attention to how he liked to spend his time. It turned out he spent a lot of time going to the library and doing the problems in organic chemistry textbooks. It occurred to him that he should spend some time developing this skill. He enjoyed it and was good at it. Furthermore, it was a potentially lucrative career. He joined a lab at the local university, ended up getting a PhD in organic chemistry, and then did a postdoc at MIT. At this point in the story, our organic chemist was on track to get a position in industry or academia, but then the 2008 economic recession arrived. His job applications went nowhere. He did another postdoc, moved to Israel for a while, and started starting a business that also went nowhere. Once again, he spent a lot of time in the local library, working through problems in notebooks. That's when he came up with the idea of tutoring organic chemistry online. At the time, almost no one was doing such a thing. Several people close to him were skeptical. They asked, who would ever want to be tutored online? James ignored them. Over the next few years, he earned a good living doing online tutoring. But that's not really what this story is about. The online tutoring was still a lot like a day job, even though he worked for himself. In his spare hours, he worked on a related project, a free WordPress blog on organic chemistry. He wrote articles and then used the articles to get search traffic. Over time, this project would become increasingly important. Two things happened next. First, as he built up the repository of articles and posts, the blog got enough traffic that requests for tutoring came streaming in without him having to seek people out. That was a major accomplishment of its own. But then something else happened that ended up being even better. After talking to enough students through thousands of hours of sessions, James had a firm grasp on their common struggles. He also knew that there weren't many solutions for them outside of personalized tutoring. That's when he started creating digital products in the form of detailed guides and reports. Anyone could buy them and study on their own. They paid less than they would for an individual session, and James could get paid without being physically present. To start, his students told him they had a hard time keeping all the reagents straight in organic chemistry. So the first product was an ebook called The Reagent Guide. Now, by the way, I had no idea what a reagent was, so I wrote to James and he said, think of reagents like ingredients in a kitchen. Students kept forgetting when to use the oregano, when to use the basil, whether the recipe called for garlic, and so on. It was a basic PDF, nothing complicated, and he did little marketing for it. He only had 100 people on his email list at the time, but when he wrote to offer them the guide, 10 of them bought it. That opened his eyes, and he began making more study guides for other common problems that students experienced. To do this, first he'd make sure he fully understood the problems. Then he'd create solutions for them and put them in guides available for purchase on his site. He built out his library of products slowly, let's say organically, and month by month, more and more people bought the guides. James now has two young kids at home, and once the youngest arrived, he began renting a small office at a co-working space so he could focus during the day. He talks about being surprised by two things. First, the fact that he can make a living writing. His college double major in English and chemistry worked out. He gets to think and write about a subject he loves, and he doesn't have to answer to anyone except his readers. He also says that he's always hated committees, so avoiding them completely is a huge plus. Second, the reports he receives from his students and readers. Many of them tell him that they wouldn't have passed the course or have gotten an A if it were not for his website. He also hears from former students who are now in medical school. Meanwhile, the website continues to grow. It was recently ranked as the 10th most visited chemistry website in the world, with 1.2 million monthly page views. It provides a healthy six-figure source of income, and yes, much of that income arrives while he sleeps. Looking back, James is grateful for the forks in the road that led him to where he is now. He's glad he wasn't able to get a job at first, because his extended time of exploration provided the foundation for everything that came afterward. He's also glad he began online tutoring, during a time when such things were very new. He's especially glad he didn't listen to those people who said, that won't work. Finally, he's proud that he decided to try a new form of monetization by creating study guides for his students. Sometimes your strangest experiments lead to your greatest discoveries. Critical factor. Medical students in need of help passing their chemistry courses are a recurring market. Every year, tens of thousands of them enter new programs, and most of James's material remains relevant over time. Side Hustle Labs, how to create an online course. Sharing your knowledge can be one of the most powerful and profitable models for making money on the side. How do you do it? Well, first, you need the right topic. Choose something specific and focus on benefits. Doesn't matter if your course has 48 different modules and a voice-controlled system that will give you daily affirmations. It matters if it will make your customer a better person, solve a big problem for them, or otherwise improve their life. Craft everything around these needs. Next, you need the right platform. How will you deliver your course material to customers? There are a lot of options for this, both simple and not so simple. I'll include some of my current recommendations in the resources section. Last, but definitely not least, you need to spend time and energy on understanding your ideal customer and knowing how to communicate with them. This is the essence of successful marketing: building relationships, making promises, and keeping them. For more on this, including those recommendations, go to sidehustleschool.com/courses. Chapter 6, bring people together. Have a knack for producing events or experiences? Use the power of community to connect people while getting paid. Academic advisor creates profitable karaoke league. A Washington, D.C. man uses his entrepreneurial skills and vocal cords to turn a profit while cultivating a community. About 5 years ago, Jesse Rauch was living in Washington, D.C. and working as an academic advisor. In his free time, he competed in a weekly kickball league, where he says he had a eureka moment. It happened while he was out one night after a game, having a few drinks at a karaoke bar. As he was sipping vodka and belting out Sweet Caroline, he suddenly had an idea. Why not take the design of a social, competitive league and apply it to karaoke? He shared his epiphany with a friend and ruminated on it a bit in between songs. But he says it only sank in that the idea had potential when he woke up the next day, less influenced by the vodka, and still thought it was a good idea. In his day job at a local community college, Jesse says that even though his students challenged him, he hadn't felt he was flexing his creative muscles. He wanted to make something of his own. And what could be more fun than competitive sing-alongs? Jesse set to work on launching District Karaoke. Its design was similar to a sports setup, where teams of up to 8 people would sign up to compete against each other in one-on-one and group karaoke matchups. Then everyone in the bar, regardless of whether they were involved in the singing or not, could vote on the winners using a web-based app. When he opened registration, Jesse was able to fill all 48 available spots for the league in just 6 days. He officially kicked off the business the following month using his 30th birthday as motivation. In addition to his friends, his new customers came to the party, which helped build early momentum. District Karaoke now runs 3 10-week seasons every year, including playoffs and finals, with each division made up of 6 teams. They consistently fill almost all available spots, which have grown to 200 per season. Jesse's initial startup costs were low, as he used outside karaoke DJs that were paid for by the bars. But he soon realized he wanted a bit more control over the league in order to grow it. He invested about $20,000 to license the music, purchase equipment, and build the voting technology. The investment quickly paid off, since the business has been profitable since the first season. In an average year, District Karaoke brings in $90,000 in revenue and makes about $45,000 in profit. The business makes this money from individual registration fees, payments from the host bars, and sponsorships. To get the word out, Jesse relies on the performers themselves as his salespeople. Through their efforts, District Karaoke was able to expand from 1 to 4 nights per week. To save money, he avoided developing a native app for phones, which is not only pricey and time-consuming, but also requires agreements with the Apple Store and Android market, and instead built a simple web-based voting site that would work on all smartphones. However, while he did save money, he had to make up for it with his time. At the outset, Jesse poured 30 to 40 hours each week into District Karaoke, all on top of his day job. He was young and motivated and wanted to build on his idea. Now, after bringing people on to manage daily operations, he only has to devote 10 hours or less each week. In addition to part-time staff, Jesse engaged league members to help on a volunteer basis through a community board. His goal in recruiting helpers wasn't just to lighten his load. Instead, it was part of the ethos behind his vision. He wanted members to feel more invested in the league and to build a strong sense of community. His hypothesis was that people are always looking for other people who share their interests as a way to find friends and build professional networks. And if someone can creatively do this connecting and curate a positive experience, people will pay for it. The sense of community also has the benefit of keeping people engaged and returning, thereby ensuring a loyal customer base. District Karaoke has now expanded to Baltimore, Chicago, New York City, and Los Angeles. Its members have sung exactly 10,236 songs, with the 50 most popular songs sung more than 1,200 times in competitions, including popular favorites I Will Survive and Don't Stop Believing. Just a small town girl. For Jesse, this side hustle has produced several positive changes. He's been able to switch day jobs, a move he credits to the new skills he gained through running District Karaoke. He's been able to save money for vacations. And best of all, he's been able to find true love. That's right, this side hustle came with some major secondary benefits. One night, while hosting a District Karaoke happy hour, Jesse says he looked to his right and saw the most beautiful woman in the world. They talked, danced, and sang, and he tried his best to impress her. They're now engaged to be married. And naturally, they even have a special karaoke song. Critical factor. No one had ever started a competitive karaoke league before. And with its abundance of 20-something working professionals, Washington, D.C. was the perfect place to begin. It also helped that Jesse was a natural connector, enthusiastic about working with volunteers and helping competitors have a good time. Urban hiker climbs to steep success. A project manager turns a passion for her city into a substantial side income while getting plenty of exercise along the way. San Francisco-based Alexandra Kinnon has a flexible job as a project manager and editor for a fully remote company. It's a dream gig in the sense that she's able to set her own schedule, allowing her to go back and forth from focusing on those job responsibilities to building something for herself. The company is in the tech industry, but Alexandra's side hustle is completely different. It's all about getting outdoors, showing city dwellers and tourists a lesser visited part of the city that includes scenic hills and hiking trails. She calls it Urban Hiker SF, and Alexandra caters to small groups as well as private and corporate events. Thanks to that flexible schedule, she's able to offer the tours any day of the week, even in the middle of the day. She also coordinates with Match.com to offer special dating hikes. To get the word out about her new business, Alexandra made a five-step plan. Number one, reach out to companies like Airbnb to see if she could offer tours to their guests. They said yes. Number two, meet with other tour providers to see how they got their businesses started. Number three, offer free and discounted tours so that she could attract customers and get reviews. Number four, reach out to her network to see if people worked at companies that wanted to do team building activities. And number five, join her local visitors bureau to meet other people in the industry. Since she started in 2012, Alexandra has hiked with over 5,000 people from around 30 countries. Depending on the season, she brings in between $2,500 and $8,000 per month, peaking in July. She also now has 4 to 5 contractors working for her, depending on the season. To complement the business, she wrote a hiking guide, which has sold more than 7,500 copies. All she spends on each hiking tour is her time. She has a few annual costs, insurance, visitors bureau membership, web hosting. But aside from those, there are no fixed costs associated with running a tour. That means that anytime she runs a tour, it's almost all profit. If you're passionate about where you live, you can turn sharing your city into a way to make money. Alexandra says that anyone who lives in a city could create a tour business, at least if they like the idea of walking and talking with groups. You first want to make sure there's a substantial number of visitors coming to your city each year. Then see if there's anyone else leading the same kind of tour that you envision. It helped Alexandra that San Francisco gets 18 million visitors a year, but no one else was leading an urban hiking tour. After 5,000 people and counting, she's now leading the way. Critical factor. Most people associate San Francisco with cable cars and chocolate factories, but there's also a great outdoors with scenic hills and trails easily accessible from the city. Alexandra leaves the city tours to other companies and focuses entirely on her urban hiking theme. Hungover accountant starts morning after party cleanup service. Feeling queasy after a night of hosting a party, this Australian accountant dreams up an unusual cleaning service that becomes a media sensation. Drinking too much on a night out can have its consequences. You might wake up the next morning with a ton of regret and a wicked hangover to match. Most people in that situation just want to pull the covers over their head and wait for the storm to pass. James Hookway, a full-time chartered accountant from Western Australia, had a different experience. For James, it was while he was hungover after a Christmas party, he came up with a crazy idea that changed his life. He and his wife had thrown the party. The next morning, they lay in bed, dreading the inevitable cleanup process. While procrastinating about when to start the job, They began talking about how great it would be if there was a service that would clean up after your party and maybe even bring you breakfast in bed. After having a good laugh about it, they dragged themselves out of bed, made their own breakfast, and got to removing all traces of the night before. But the idea stayed with James, and like a fine wine, actually got better with age. Fast forward to 6 months later, and the concept still excited him. After conducting some research, he learned that although there were a lot of cleaning services out there, none of them marketed specifically to the hangover crowd. In fact, there wasn't much differentiation at all. They were all generic companies with boring branding. So James decided to test the concept. To keep things simple, he created a Facebook page describing the proposed service and shared it with his friends and family. The name for the page almost wrote itself. He called it Hangover Helpers. What happened next was like popping open a bottle of champagne on New Year's Eve. Perhaps it was that perfect name, the concept itself, or maybe the right person just happened to share the page. Whatever the cause, what followed was one of the wildest weeks of his life. Print journalists from major publications, TV shows, and radio stations from all over the country contacted him for interviews. James had reached national exposure in less than 2 weeks, and everyone wanted to talk to the creator of such a comical yet useful idea. This is something most larger companies are never able to achieve despite expensive and time-consuming campaigns. With all that free marketing, it was inevitable that customers would arrive faster than a headache after too many gin and tonics. And that's exactly what happened. His first booking came in that very week. James picked up some basic cleaning products, a Ghostbuster-style vacuum cleaner, and some food supplies for the breakfast. He found the house in a state of total chaos, but that didn't faze the new founder of Hangover Helpers. It meant he was able to get some before and after photos to showcase the type of work he was capable of. After the cleaning was done and the party host had enjoyed their breakfast burritos, James knew this could be a viable side business. With that first job completed after a successful launch, he decided to build more of a brand around Hangover Helpers. This meant graduating from a simple Facebook page to an official website. James figured that an investment in a professional-looking brand and website would be important, and he was meticulous in how he set it up. He wanted visitors to be able to fill out as many details as possible in order to get a detailed quote online before booking the service. That way, he could cut down on the administrative work and make the business much more efficient to run. This was especially important because he was still working at his job as an accountant. 2 years after starting, he had performed more than 250 cleans and earned $45,000 without spending a single cent on advertising. Business comes entirely through word of mouth and his social media presence on Facebook. He's cleaned up after everything from dinner parties all the way to full-blown extravaganzas that the cast of the Hangover movies would be envious of. Sometimes he's shown up with people still asleep on the couches and vacuumed around them. He once arrived at a party that was still raging early the next morning. It's all in a day's or a morning's work. The biggest, messiest party he's seen achieved a scale of its own. A party of about 350 college students took place at a mansion while the parents were out of town. The backyard was the size of a football field, and there was so much mess left over that James had to call in reinforcements from a trash removal company. Even the helpers had a hangover after that one. After operating successfully in Perth for 2 years, James expanded the service to Melbourne with the help of some dedicated cleaning teams on the ground. Although it isn't making enough to pay all the bills just yet, James hopes that in the future he can expand to more cities and go national across the rest of the country. At that time, he hopes to be able to quit his day job and go all in on Hangover Helpers. Raise a glass to this nonconformist accountant. He's helping the party hosts of Australia recover, one hangover at a time. Critical factor. There are thousands of cleaning companies in Australia, but only one that caters to the hangover crowd. The unique idea brought James a ton of media attention and launched his business. Foodie PR Manager blogs for free stuff and real money. Two friends get paid to post photos of their lunch on Instagram. No, really. And then one of them takes over the business while working with more than 450 brands. By day, Alexandra Booz worked as an account manager for a public relations firm in Washington, D.C. On nights and weekends, this foodie turned food and lifestyle blogging into a profitable side hustle. It started with a project she shared with her friend Karen. Whenever Alex would visit Karen in New York City, they would always go out to eat somewhere new and interesting. It was during one of those nights when they were looking for their next meal that they decided to document all their fun foodie adventures. If you've ever wondered how to get paid for posting photos of your lunch, keep listening. After a month of thinking about what their name should be, they launched East Coast Contessas. What started out as just friends and family liking their photos of food quickly turned into over 1,000 followers. For several months, they visited small bakeries, coffee shops, and food trucks, offering their services, reviews, and social media campaigns for free. With this attitude, they were able to feature a lot of different businesses. They also attended conferences, dinners, and festivals. Their goal was to meet chefs, concierges, and other food influencers. In other words, they hustled. Once she realized there was a market for their reviews, Alexandra invested in some equipment so she could produce better media than what they were doing with their phones. She bought two cameras and a few interchangeable lenses. By keeping her eye out for sales, she only spent $1,300 on equipment that was worth at least $4,000. The new gear allowed her to create even better photos and video. Meanwhile, her consistent networking helped spread the word about their services. To kick off the next year, Alex and Karen made a list of all the brands they wanted to partner with. They then reached out and pitched each brand personally. Since both of them came from media backgrounds, they already had a good handle on how to craft engaging narratives that would be interesting to potential partners. They also knew that research was key. They spent time learning everything they could about a brand before making an offer. This level of research also helped Alex and Karen figure out how the brand would work with East Coast Contessas. Their efforts paid off when they landed their first paid partnership with a national wine company. They leveraged that partnership and kept pitching to other brands on their list. When it came to pricing, they offered multiple packages, depending on the brand and situation. For some brands, it made sense to just do social media promotion for $300 per photo posted to their Instagram account. For other brands, social media promotion plus an editorial write-up on their blog at $1 per word was a better approach. For brands that wanted to go all in, they'd offer social media promotion, an editorial write-up, and a promo video, which started at $400 on top of the other fees. They priced all these packages using three factors: the size of their audience at the time, the size of the company they were pitching, and the amount of work required. In their second year of the project, they brought in $15,000. Then in the first half of the third year, it was more than $17,000. The East Coast Contessas eventually realized that the restaurant industry had a lot of crossover with the hospitality industry. They then started branching out to boutique hotels and mid-sized national chains. Before long, Alex and Karen were staying for free in fancy hotels. During those visits, they'd feature not only the rooms and amenities, but also the hotel bar or restaurant, a natural tie-in. This led to them receiving offers for press trips, where all of their costs were covered, as well as partnerships with tourism boards. Alex and Karen eventually parted ways as business partners, with Alex continuing and Karen moving on to do other things. Since launching 3 years ago, Alex has partnered with nearly 450 brands from the food and beverage, fashion, and beauty industries. And with dozens more partnerships lined up, she doesn't have plans to slow down anytime soon, even as she moves to Prague to begin a new day job. Critical factor. Alex and her former business partner were willing to work for free, at least in the beginning. By approaching small businesses that wouldn't normally pay for promotion, they were able to build a client list along with their following. The story also includes an action plan. Step one, identify a goal and a strategy. What do you hope to achieve in working with brands, and how will you help them enough to justify your fees? Step two, build the project on a shoestring budget. Spend as little as possible on gear, online services, and whatever supplies you need. Step three, be willing to work for free or in exchange for something else at first. Use the initial gigs to establish credibility and then pitch paying clients. And step four, be specific about what you offer to provide. Social media promotion doesn't give potential clients much info on what they'll actually receive. Three dedicated posts to our 5,000 followers in your local area is much better. Busy professional clips into biking wine tours. A marketing executive sees an opportunity to meet a tourism need in an up-and-coming wine region. Karen Burry didn't think she had time for a side hustle. As a partner in a creative communications agency, as well as a frequent speaker with the National Speakers Bureau, she had a lot on her plate. But she also had an idea that wouldn't go away. Karen had grown up visiting Prince Edward County, an up-and-coming Canadian wine region about 2 hours outside of Toronto. Her dad eventually moved there, and as an adult, she continued to visit every summer with friends. They all loved touring the wineries, and they noticed that while there were limo tours available, there were no bicycle tours. Karen knew this was a popular activity offered elsewhere. She also believed that if she didn't enter the market, someone else would. As she put it, if your idea keeps you up at night because you know you'll be annoyed if someone else does it before you, it's a good sign that you should pursue it. So a couple of years ago, and working with two of her best friends, Karen started the County Wine Tours. The first step to launching a bicycle tour business was figuring out a route that had enough wineries within cycling distance. Aaron approached wineries on the potential route, making sure to find backup options in case of busy days or to accommodate any special requests. When selecting wineries, she considered their offerings to make sure there was a good variety of tastings, an affordable cost, and the right location, both in terms of being close to each other and also close to a fixed starting point. The region has a converted rail line for walking, jogging, and biking, so Aaron also wanted to include part of that trail in the tour. With all these considerations in mind, Aaron selected 5 primary stops and a number of backups for their guided wine tour. Once the route was in place, the next step was to get some bikes. Luckily, a family member worked for Giant Bikes, the world's largest bicycle manufacturer. So Aaron connected with her to select a cruiser bike with custom accessories that would be comfortable and really stand out on the road. She purchased 10 bikes, helmets, baskets, and repair tools. Branding and marketing came next. Since Aaron and her 2 co-founders all work in marketing, they had an advantage. They focused on a few key areas, first and foremost being search engine optimization, SEO, and Google AdWords, since most people start planning their wine weekend getaways by searching for a few specific phrases. Setting up their TripAdvisor profile was another must for their business. They also invited members of the media to the area to take a tour and partnered with a local bed and breakfast to invite their guests. But just because they're pros doesn't mean they did it all on their own. As Aaron said when we talked, it's impossible to do it all yourself. Whether you have co-founders, a virtual assistant, a freelancer or intern, or some other resource, having someone else to help you as you go will be imperative. She took her own advice, working with a freelance designer to create their logo, branding, website, and all marketing collateral. They also brought on an accountant to handle financial forecasting and accounting. Crazy how that works. You know, you bring on an accountant to handle accounting. One thing Aaron didn't have to worry about was who is going to lead these guided tours. Her dad and stepmom are both enthusiastic wine drinkers, as well as experts on the local area. They eagerly signed up to be part of the adventure. After a lot of planning on weekends and evenings, the county wine tours spun into business. Tours are offered at $95 per person, and so far they've been completely booked up on weekend days. They also offer midweek tours with anywhere from 2 to 10 people each. With up to a dozen inquiries coming in daily, Aaron and her co-founders are excited that their great idea has gotten so much traction so quickly. Their biggest problem at this point is managing demand on popular days. With the framework in place for public tours, they've also created private tours that people can book for a birthday party or bachelorette party, as well as corporate tours that companies can use as part of a retreat. Oh, and for those who prefer beer over wine, they now offer a brewery option. Aaron's favorite tour is one she led herself. She hosted a private trip for her friends, which she assumed would be a special way to share her new project with them. But at the last tour stop, it became even more special when her boyfriend surprised her by proposing. The winery staff was in on it, appearing with sparkling wine the moment she said yes. Though it made for an excellent photo op, Aaron now has to manage expectations. "I make no guarantees that future tours will include a proposal," she says. While it's clear that there's lots of room for expansion, they plan to ride out this season with their current setup and then decide how many tours to add for next year. Critical factor. Bicycle tours to wineries operated in plenty of other regions, but not in Prince Edward County. Meanwhile, there were plenty of tourists coming to town. Aaron put 2 wheels together and created the first ever bicycle tours of the region. Florida man leads scooter tours after watching rap video. A corporate refugee relocates to Florida and kicks off a new hustle leading adult scooter tours. Jordan Crowler wears tank tops and a pair of board shorts to work most days. But 5 years ago, he was working a typical job as an art director for a major corporation in Dallas, Texas. Wanting to break free from the golden handcuffs, Jordan worked his way into a full-time remote position. He had the goal of moving his wife and 2 young daughters to their dream destination, a little stretch of paradise in the Florida panhandle called 30A, where The Truman Show, starring Jim Carrey, was filmed. Not knowing a soul on 30A and having to support his family, he decided not to tell his employer that he was moving. The company he worked for was going through a big merger, with layoffs happening left and right, and Jordan had already endured all sorts of corporate bullying and harassment. He still did his job well, but in the back of his mind, he knew the clock was ticking until a more permanent change would be required. Being a resourceful person, he looked around his newfound paradise for new opportunities. One thing he noticed during his research was that bikes, skateboards, and walking were the preferred methods of transportation. It was far easier than dealing with parking, and the weather was almost always nice. Not long after that, Jordan had what he calls his aha moment. Browsing on YouTube, he stumbled upon the music video for Macklemore's Thrift Shop, in which the artist undertakes an anthropological exploration to a number of secondhand stores in search of formerly unwanted items. In parts of the video, Macklemore is seen riding on an old-school scooter.